town, Chicago is.
The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference is coming to Chicago for its one and only 2019 conference. You can meet and hear Ross Douthat, Matt Harrison, Wesley Smith, Aaron Wolf, Hans Feeney, and Will Whedon Friday, June 7th and Saturday, June 8th at Concordia University, Chicago. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org. Chicago is. The timing is probably not coincidental. First, there is the defrocking of Cardinal Theodore McCarrick. He is now a name of infamy in the Roman Catholic Church because he somehow rose to the level of cardinal. That's as high as you can go before becoming pope. He somehow rose to the level of cardinal while for decades engaging in the sexual abuse of both minors and seminarians. His story is well known. It's very rare for a cardinal to be defrocked, and he was this week, right on the eve of a planned meeting at the Vatican to deal with the sexual abuse crisis. Will this meeting deal with the crisis, or will it simply say nice things about the victims? Will it get to the heart of what has been the cause of the sexual abuse clergy abuse, at least in the Roman Catholic Church? We're going to be answering those questions. Joining us to do so on Issues Etc., Rod Dreher. He's a regular guest, senior editor at the American Conservative, and author of several books, including The Benedict Option and a recent column titled The Sham Rome Meeting. Also, he's written one called Cardinal Tagle on Sex Abuse. Rod, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks for having me back, Todd.
First of all, what's your reaction to the defrocking of Cardinal Theodore McCarrick?
Well, it was the right thing to do. It was overdue, but thank God it's done. And I think that this settles the issue at one level. But what still remains to be answered and to be delved into is, how did McCarrick get so far in the hierarchy of the Catholic Church, even though a lot of people in the Vatican and elsewhere in the church hierarchy knew exactly what he was up to? Until and unless they answer those questions, and Pope Francis has been trying to cover up and get in the way of any investigation, until they figure out how he got where he got, this whole issue of Cardinal McCarrick will not be over and done with.
So this is the minimum that the Vatican can do with respect to McCarrick and his part in the priestly abuse scandal.
Sure, sure. And you got to remember that Cardinal McCarrick was not just the Cardinal Archbishop of Washington. He was one of the biggest movers and shakers in the entire Catholic world. He was responsible in part for electing Cardinal Bergoglio as Pope Francis. And he had a lot of pull in the Rome of John Paul II, in part because every time he would go to Rome, he would bring money over there, money to donate to the Pope's favorite causes and things like that. So McCarrick was an extremely ambitious churchman from the beginning and worked his way up to the very top of the hierarchy, not only in the United States, but in the entire global Catholic Church. Archbishop Carlo Maria Vigano, who had been the Vatican's ambassador to the United States for a while in the early 2000s, he came out last year with a stunning statement naming names of people in the Vatican who knew all about Cardinal McCarrick and did nothing. Pope Francis refused pointedly to respond to Vigano's charges, but it seems like from the things that we've learned so far, everything Vigano said is true. Until and unless Pope Francis will answer these substantive allegations from a man, Archbishop Vigano, who was in a position to know about them, people have a right and a responsibility to be suspicious.
One of the questions I recall with respect to those revelations from Vigano was whether or not a paper trail on McCarrick existed and those who knew what he was up to for all those decades. Has that been examined any further?
No, it hasn't. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, Cardinal DiNardo, the head of the American Bishops Conference, asked the Pope to open up an investigation within the Vatican about McCarrick and to uncover the paper trail, the Pope refused to do it. And if those documents are presumably in the Vatican archives, nobody can get their hands on them. The Pope says no, unless somebody happens to leak them.
So to kind of put a bow on McCarrick, what did we learn about not only the extent of the priestly abuse, but the scope? And I'm thinking here in particular, the activity that was taking place with seminarians and seminaries in the Roman Catholic Church.
Right. Well, the thing that got McCarrick in trouble in the first place, that led to the first reports last summer in the New York Times, was a statement by the Archdiocese of New York that McCarrick, they believed that he had been credibly accused of molesting minors. That was the first shot. The second shot came when it was revealed that McCarrick had molested a number of seminarians over the years. He would invite them to his beach house there on the Jersey Shore, because he was Archbishop of Newark, New Jersey for a while. And he was widely known to be doing this. I found out about it in 2002 when I was writing for National Review. I started making inquiries, and McCarrick had a lawyer call my boss back in 2002, admit that it was true, but say that we want to get Dreher off this story. Well, my boss, to his great credit, did not take me off the story, but unfortunately, I couldn't report anything because nobody who was telling me what happened would go on the record. Point is, this was widely known, one of the worst-kept secrets in the church, at least on the East Coast. I found out from other journalists that they had been trying to get to the bottom of it for years, but never could because nobody would go on the record. But this is part of the corruption, that so many people knew about it within the church. I was told that a group of laymen, Catholic laymen, before McCarrick was named to the Archbishop of Washington, they flew to Rome on their own dime to meet with people in the Vatican and say, you can't elevate McCarrick. He molests seminarians. You've got to stop this. Well, McCarrick got his hat anyway because he had raised over $60 million for the church. So that's why just defrocking McCarrick doesn't end this story. They have got to find out how this happens, how somebody who is known to be sexually corrupt, abusing his office like this, continues to rise and rise and rise within the church.
Why have you called the Vatican meeting that begins tomorrow for the protection of minors in the church a sham Rome meeting?
Yeah, well, that description came to me from a Catholic priest. I happened to share it, but this priest sent to me the schedule for this big Rome meeting, which has been in the works for a few months. And I should tell your listeners that late last year, the American Catholic bishops got together and were going to debate and probably pass a series of rules to apply to themselves for how to handle it when priests and bishops go after seminarians and things like that. Pope Francis sent down at the last minute word saying, don't do that. Wait till we have our big global meeting in Rome in February, where we bring bishops from all over the world and we work out a global policy. Well, a lot of people were suspicious about that. How could he do that so soon? But they decided to give the Pope the benefit of the doubt. Well, the meeting convenes later this week. The Vatican put out the schedule for the meeting, and this is why it's a sham. There's nothing on this schedule involving the nitty-gritty of the scandal. There's nobody there from the right Vatican offices that handle issues of canon law and disciplining clerics. There's lots of talk on this schedule about Francis's general themes of his pontificate, so-called splitting of the sheep, the church's field hospital, which are fine things to talk about, but they're not about sexual abuse. I think in the end, this is going to be a huge public relations exercise and no more. And at this point, American Catholics are so fed up with their church's leadership and the church's inability to police itself and to fix itself that I think that there's going to be some kind of revolt when this is all said and done.
You have recently written about the Archbishop of Manila, who will be one of the speakers in Rome this week. What did you find out there?
This is Cardinal Luis Tagle, a relatively young archbishop. He's in his early 60s. A lot of people within the Catholic Church have said that he could be a successor to Francis. He's very charismatic, but Francis has chosen him to lead off the meeting in Rome with a talk about the importance of bishops getting the smell of the sheep. That's the term Francis keeps using over and over, to say that bishops need to understand their flock, need to not be locked away inside their chanceries, but to get out there and see what the people are saying and feeling and thinking. Not a bad idea, but again, this is public relations. The Cardinal Archbishop of Manila, Tagle, he has no experience handling abuse, and it's hard to see why he was given such a prominent position at all, other than the fact that he is seen as the Pope Francis of Asia. Again, this is all about public relations. And by the way, they have nothing going on at this meeting addressing what to do when bishops molest seminarians. Cardinal Supich of Chicago, who is one of the organizers of this meeting in Rome, he was asked in a press conference earlier this week about that. Why are you all not talking about this? It was incredible what he said. He said, "We decided to focus on giving voice to those with no voice at all, the minors who are sexually abused." Well, so he's doing this for the children. He's taking the spotlight off the bishops so we can put it on the children, or so he says. Incredibly cynical, and I think fewer and fewer people are falling for it.
To connect these two things, it is extraordinarily rare for a cardinal in the church, in this case Theodore McCarrick, to be defrocked. It does happen, but it happens mostly in very early history of the church and very rarely by comparison. How would you respond to someone who says, look, they took an extreme step here to try and deal with this issue, and this is a sign that the Vatican is turning over a new leaf on priestly abuse?
Yeah, I would say that's nonsense. The only reason they went after McCarrick was because they had no choice. The New York Times supported what McCarrick had really done. There was this huge uproar in the American media and in the American church. A lot of lay people were furious about it, and the Pope had his back against the wall. Remember, Archbishop Vigano told the Pope in 2013 what McCarrick had done, and the Pope still chose to bring McCarrick in from the cold, so to speak, because Pope Benedict had sidelined McCarrick. Francis brought him out back into the spotlight and gave him certain missions to do in the church. Clearly, Pope Francis doesn't take this as seriously as he ought to do. He was only made to take it seriously because the media finally turned its spotlight on McCarrick. And I should say, too, Todd, that one thing your listeners ought to be paying attention to is tomorrow, Thursday, there will be the publication of a book in 8 languages around the world called, in English, In the Closet of the Vatican. The title in European languages is even more evocative. It's called Sodom. It's a book by a gay French journalist who says he spent 4 years digging very deeply into the records around the world, sexual activity of gay cardinals, gay priests, gay bishops, and interviewing people in the Vatican. He says that the Vatican is about 80% gay. I think that's going to be a very difficult statistic to back up, but whatever happens, whatever said in this book, it's going to dominate the coverage, international coverage of the meeting in Rome, because according to this book, everything that's been written about the book so far, it's going to show that the Vatican is entirely hypocritical, that it's run by gay men, sexually active gay men, and that anything that they try to do about the abuse crisis has to be understood in light of those facts. So it's going to be a massive scandal, and I frankly don't know how the Vatican recovers from this.
Rod Dreher is our guest. He's senior editor at the American Conservative. We're talking about the defrocking of Cardinal Theodore McCarrick and this week's meeting in Rome of more than 100 bishops to address the clergy sexual abuse crisis. We'll talk about that after this.
When God decided to love you, he wasn't content to sort of love you at a distance. He wanted to get up close when that happened, which is why Christ took on human flesh.
Pastor Hans Feeney of Lutheran Satire talking about his presentation at the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
But even after Christ ascended to the right hand of the Father, God still wanted to dwell with you through the flesh and blood of his Son. He wanted to be physically present and in the room when he covered you in forgiveness and life and salvation. So that's why he's given his church the Lord's Supper, and that's why we should rejoice every time God comes into the room and invites us to feast on the same flesh and the same blood that won our salvation at Calvary.
You can meet and hear Pastor Hans Feeney making the case for the Lord's Supper at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 7th and 8th in Chicago. Learn more at issuesetc.org.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Memoria Press now offers 8 levels of the Simply Classical curriculum for children with special needs. These full-year packages help you teach reading, writing, arithmetic, art and music, poetry, science, history, Latin, classical and Christian studies in incremental and multisensory ways for mastery. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and enter promo code LPR9 to save on resources for your home or school.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking with Rod Dreher about the defrocking of Cardinal Theodore McCarrick and this week's meeting of the Vatican to deal with the sexual abuse crisis. We just posted the lodging accommodations for the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference June 7th and 8th in Chicago. You'll find area hotels and very affordable dorm options on the campus of Concordia University Chicago. Making the Case features great speakers like Matt Harrison, Ross Douthat, Hans Feeney, Wesley Smith, Aaron Wolf, and Pastor Will Whedon. Early bird registration is $115. It includes meals on Friday night and Saturday afternoon and evening. Find out more and register at issuesetc.org or send your check and our downloadable registration form to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. The one and only Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 7th and 8th in Chicago. Rod, how do you explain this objection that I've heard, I'm sure you've heard it as well, since the story of clergy abuse has rekindled? This isn't about homosexuality. How do you explain that objection?
I think that it's partly a result of the sort of propaganda that we get fed in this culture all the time, where you can't say anything negative about homosexuals. Now, we have to keep in mind that most sexual abuse of minors is heterosexual. But in the Catholic Church, we have the figures from the Church's own studies. 80% of all the minors who've been sexually abused are male. And if you look at the general population statistics, gay men are only 2 to 3% of the entire population. But in the Catholic Church, it is men abusing boys. And I don't see how you can argue with those statistics, though they certainly do. And I think that this week we saw Frank Bruni, a gay columnist for the New York Times, say that he had read the In the Closet of the Vatican book. It's a devastating book. He said he's really afraid that homophobes will take the information there about the overwhelming presence of sexually active gay men in the Catholic priesthood, and they'll use it against gay men. Well, look, I think that if the information in the book is true, then we have to act on that true information. We can't stop and say, is this good for gay people? Is this good or bad for the cause of gay rights? We have to look at what's right in front of our eyes. And a lot of people just don't want to see it because it leads them to a conclusion that they would rather not draw.
I'm curious if the word homosexuality will be mentioned at the Vatican meeting this week.
Well, I'm sure it won't, because this is the pink elephant in the sacristy that they don't want to deal with. But it has been mentioned this week by two very important cardinals, Cardinal Raymond Burke and Cardinal Walter Brandmuller. These are two older cardinals who were among the four that released something called the Dubia, a formal request of Pope Francis to clarify some of his teachings, which he's completely ignored. There were four Dubia cardinals. Two have already died waiting on Francis to answer them, but these two are still alive. They issued a blistering statement yesterday saying the primary problem here is active homosexuality within the Roman Curia and within the Church, and that has to be faced. Well, the official Vatican line is going to be to ignore that, But more and more ordinary Catholics, men and women in the street, are realizing that they've been lied to for so long, and that their church, the men who lead their church, many of them are leading double lives, and they are incapable of reform. I know I'm talking on Lutheran radio, so your listeners know that the Catholic Church has been to a place like this before. I really don't know what's going to happen in this case, though. But we are seeing in the Wall Street Journal today, there's a wealthy Catholic layman, Tim Bush, out of California, who wrote a piece calling on ordinary Catholics to stand up and to take their church back for themselves. I think we're going to start seeing more and more of this. When I was in Spain earlier this year promoting my book, The Benedict Option, which is out there, I was shocked by the anger that ordinary Catholics feel towards their bishops, not just about sexual abuse, but about what they consider to be the bishop's lackadaisical, lack of evangelical zeal. Ordinary Catholics who want to hold on to their faith are going to have to become a lot more Lutheran, if I can say that, in their attitude towards their own church. Because if they sit back and wait for the institution to fix itself, that's just not going to happen.
In the best of all possible worlds, what should the Vatican do in the face of now decades and decades of revelations about priestly abuse reaching all the way up to the level of cardinals and who knows where else into the Vatican itself? In the best of all possible worlds, Rod, what should the Vatican do?
That is the million-dollar question, Todd. It is so deep and so pervasive. I really don't know if there is a quick and easy fix. In fact, I doubt there is. But there has to be some kind of call for accountability and severe actions at the top. This Pope probably can't do it. Maybe the next one can, but you've got to clean out the stables here. They've got to see bishops, even cardinals, who have abused their office to cover up their own sexual misconduct. They've got to be seen to lose their jobs. We saw in the case of the Reformation, it took six Renaissance popes who were deaf to the cries of the faithful to clean up the corruption. They were blind to the corruption in their own church. They thought what they had was going to last forever, until it didn't. I'm afraid that it's going to take the same kind of disaster for the current generation of Vatican leadership to recognize what they have to do. And of course, we know the Catholic Church did have the so-called Counter-Reformation in response to losing half of Europe to Protestantism. I don't know what that would look like, though, in the 21st century, in a global church, in an era of global media. Because as soon as anything happens in Rome or in a diocese in the United States, it's instantly known around the world. So the kind of challenge that tomorrow's Catholic leaders face on this front is something completely unprecedented because of technology.
I'm sitting here thinking about both this topic and the general topic of the book you mentioned that you wrote, The Benedict Option. And what disturbs me probably most profoundly about the priestly abuse scandal is that I, as a Lutheran Christian, regard myself as evangelical Catholic. I think in the days and years to come, Christians like myself are going to need the Roman Church at its best in terms of what we will face from the onslaught of an increasingly hostile culture. And I've lost a significant amount of confidence in that.
Well, I'm completely with you there. As your regular listeners will know, I was Catholic for 13 years and left the Catholic Church 13 years ago because I lost my faith covering the scandal. I'm an Eastern Orthodox Christian now. But I agree with you that, you know, whether we're Catholic or not, the Roman Catholic Church is one of the main pillars of Western civilization. We have gotten past the point in the West now where we can hold on to our own fights with Rome and among Christians over the authority of the Pope and things like that. We are living in a post-Christian civilization now. People like you and me, not Catholic, but we need the Catholic Church to be strong. And that's the thing that worries me so much. It doesn't bother me that the Catholic Church isn't getting as many people to church on Sunday morning as it would have otherwise. In fact, we're getting some Catholics, They're coming to our Orthodox church because they're fed up with the Catholic church. You know, I'm glad to see more faces showing up at my church, but in the end, if the Catholic church is weak, it's going to affect all of us Christians and our religious liberty and our ability to preach the gospel with credibility. Because we're finding now that more and more people are becoming cynical, especially young people, cynical about all religion because of what's happening in the Catholic Church. I deal with that myself almost on a daily basis on my blog. I think that we all have skin in this game as Christians, as believers in Christ. I'm sure you have Catholic friends. I know I do, and they are suffering tremendously through this. They are very faithful people, and they want their kids to grow up knowing Jesus Christ and knowing Jesus Christ as Roman Catholics. My heart goes out to them because I see how much pain they're in.
Finally, Rod, this has, and it should be pointed out, a crisis that, while the particulars of it are unique to Rome because of its institution, clergy abuse is not unique to Rome. Are you any more encouraged by the way that Protestants have handled their versions of clergy abuse? And I'm thinking in particular about the recent actions of the Southern Baptist Convention.
Yes, the Houston Chronicle and the San Antonio Express News recently reported on clergy sex abuse within the Southern Baptist Convention and how it was not taken as seriously as it ought to have been in the past. I have been encouraged to see Southern Baptist leaders who are now in positions of authority not get defensive, not try to downplay this, but take responsibility for it and vow to clean this up. I think that they have learned from the suffering of the Catholics and seeing how the Catholic leadership tried for the longest time to ignore it, then to downplay it, then to lie to the people saying, we've got this under control, when in fact they didn't. And I'd like to think that the Protestant leadership had observed what the Catholics did and said, we can't get away with that. We've got to deal with this right now, or we're going to have to deal with it when it's even worse down the line, when we have even less credibility.
Rod Dreher is senior editor at the American Conservative, author of several books, including The Benedict Option, and a recent column titled The Sham Rome Meeting and Cardinal Tagle on Sex Abuse. You can read his columns and purchase The Benedict Option at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Rod, thanks.
Thanks so much, Todd.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll discuss creation and education textbooks with Dr. Barbara Helmkamp. We'll talk with Dr. Joel Bierman about challenges to the Lutheran way of living. And it's our weekly media coverage of religion feature with Terry Mattingly.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Collinsville, Illinois is happy to support the Christ-centered, cross-focused ministry of Issues Etc. Join us for worship, Bible classes, youth ministry, and other opportunities to grow in Christ. We have a Christian day school for children in preschool to eighth grade. We are located at 1300 Beltline Road. Call us at 618-344-3151 or visit www.goodshepherdcollinsville.org.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.